You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody. Here District, I'm the captain of this vessel on this fantastic voyage. Me and my first mate, my son Chris Johnson, we're the only father and son combination in the history of NCAA basketball to win a championship at the same school. You think I would know how to say that a lot more fluently as many times as I've said it? We are fortunate. What's up, Chris? How you doing, man?
I'm great, baby. How are you, MJ?
I'm doing good, man. I'm excited because we're going to talk about a whole myriad of different basketball subjects with these two gentlemen. And I'm really, really excited. This guy's a friend of someone we know very well, Josiah Johnson, the legend of winning, a.k.a. Lowe.
Lowe is in the building.
Okay. One of the most popular. Let me read some of the resume here. Popular NBA content creators and streamers out there. You can find him on Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch. Host of Low Posts, Low Likes, Foot on the Line, and Legend of Winning channels on YouTube has over 100.
Damn.
Did I say million?
Yeah, man, he don't move in units.
100
probably
what?
Is. It probably is. Yeah.
100 million YouTube views across the channels. Welcome, Lowe, to Here District. We appreciate you being here. And then also, Jacob Sutton, one of the favorites of the show, does a great job with his, we say newsletter, we say blog, we'll say newsletter for our show.
Like I said, it depends on who's asking.
Who's asking?
It really depends on who's asking.
But it's jsuthoops.substack.com. Check it out. I mean, just a lot of great information. Gentlemen, let's get started, man. So now, it was interesting because the Bucks without Giannis, trade deadline, no movement. And especially with all the noise that was going on, I didn't really know what to expect. So let me just start off with that. Did it pan out? First, go to you, Lowe. You can jump in, Jason, anytime you want, Chris. But did it shake down how you felt it would, Lowe, or were you surprised by anything?
I was kind of surprised, but in all honesty, it didn't really turn out to be that bad. I actually think that the Bucks had a sneaky, really good deadline.
Yeah. Jacob?
Yeah, I was actually really, really happy because of Ousmane Dieng and him being traded to the Bucks. I've been kind of watching him in the G League for a little while. Of course, he was the pick that the Thunder traded away Alper and Şengün for, which in hindsight was not very good. But Ousmane he's just such a good player, such a smooth shooter. I mean, I'll talk about him a little more later, but I mean, I was happy with what the Bucks did. Cole Anthony, you know, it was kind of time to, you know, move away from him as much as I loved him early on before the season started, which is my fault. But I mean, I think it was a successful trade deadline given what the Bucks have right now. And I mean, that doesn't even mention, you know, what they did with Cam Thomas, who we'll obviously get to later. But overall, I'd say it was successful with what they had going.
I've been telling MJ that I feel like this iteration of the Bucks is arguably like one of the most exciting guard cores that we have in the NBA, guard and wing cores. Just kind of wanted to get you guys' opinion on that and the trade deadline. Did the Bucks win the trade deadline with the two pickups they made in Ousmane Dieng and Cam Thomas?
Yeah, that's where I was kind of surprised. And I shout out to the front office. You know, I see a lot of organizations where you have to like basically win around the margins, especially when we get to this point where you're trying to make the most out of every single dollar on the salary cap. Yeah. And to pick up Dieng, to pick up Cam, the way that Ryan is improving, KPJ, now he's back. He's been playing a lot more as well.
Yep.
A lot of that has really just inserted new life and energy into this roster. A lot of young players as well, which is something that the Bucks have been desperately trying to scrap for when they kind of gave up a lot of those draft picks. So, yeah, I believe that the deadline was sensational for them. And they're doing all of this, in particular what I'm seeing out of Dieng. They're doing this without Giannis on the floor. And I do think Dieng, his minutes. So having somebody else out there, young, athletic, knock down threes, help out defensively, be disruptive. All those things are just very impressive to kind of just find out on the market, even when you don't have that many draft picks to go out there and get a quality player like that.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think, and I'm guilty of this as well, and anybody who reads my newsletter kind of knows that I've been very low on Cam Thomas from a standpoint of, the defense just rubs me the wrong way, you know, as it does with a lot of people. But I think me and a lot of others have kind of swayed too far where it's like, oh, his defense is so bad, he can't play any form of winning basketball, right? And I'd say the secret to what they've done in terms of the backcourt is that Ryan Rollins and KPJ are both good point of attack defenders. And they cover for a lot of what Cam Thomas does, because on the Nets, nobody's covering for Cam Thomas at the guard position. They had tons of 19-year-olds out there, even when they would play him. And you just can't expect a player. And even, I mean, think about when Kyrie was there. Kyrie is, you know, at his age that he was there, was not a phenomenal point of attack defender at that time, getting older. And so Cam Thomas has never been flanked by guards that can properly cover for his weaknesses. And I think Rollins and KPJ, while not like, you know, they're not Alex Caruso, they're not, you know, all these guys that are, you know, elite point of attack defenders, they are at least, you know, above average enough to where other teams can't constantly attack Cam, yeah, because you're going to have these other two guys that are going to be able to cover for him as help defenders from the perimeter. So overall, to answer your question, yeah, I mean, getting Cam Thomas for the price you got him through the rest of the season is genius. And even if he walks this offseason, I mean, you don't lose anything on paper. So that's the best place you can be in today's environment with the salary cap.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting, we had Cam on the podcast last week. And the one thing he now he said defense is overrated, but in the context
he's not completely wrong.
In the context of individual defense is overrated. In the context of that, you've got teammates out there, and as long as the scheme is complementary to whatever your skill set is as a defensive player. And to that point, I've been watching him work on defense, and he's working to keep guys out of the middle, kind of funnel them into the help on the baseline or wherever it happens to be. And I mean, right. I mean, that's pretty much all you could ask for a guy who is so offensive minded, just to give that level of effort to stay within the scheme that you're trying to run. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Effort.
All you want is the effort with Cam.
Yeah. Effort is everything too in the league today. You got to have guys that are willing to make the extra play. The other question I have for you guys, kind of on the same line, Bucks are 8-2 without Giannis. Now, when Giannis comes back, there's going to be, you know, a period of transition. Guys are playing free, flowing. Guys kind of have a different level of a green light that they're going to have with Giannis. So do you guys think that this situation with the Bucks can continue to work? Seamless offensive flow, all this excitement that we have when Giannis returns with three score-first type guards. This is a guy that's 36% usage. Giannis needs the rock. How do you guys think that's going to kind of pan out when Giannis does return?
I don't know. I personally think it'll be fine. Obviously, Giannis is going to add to the team defense, just be another active, tall, lengthy body out there to kind of help him on that side. But offensively, I believe these are the type of players that you want to put around Giannis, someone who's not just a three-point shooter. When you get chased off the line, you have the ability to put the ball on the floor and create for yourself. When you are kind of stuck out there in isolation, you can create for yourself. Coming off the pick and roll, it's not as redundant or predictable as a lot of other players may have in the NBA. And so when you have someone like Cam, you know, not a defender, but also he ain't the passer either. But that's fine when you have someone like Giannis who can create for everyone else the way that he does. Mm. And at times just needs somebody to go out there and kind of create for himself. When you have someone like Ryan as well, three-point shooter, he was already kind of, you know, molding into that type of player to play alongside Giannis. And I think Zhang is the one that I am really high on to see the type of minutes with him and Giannis on the floor on both sides, three-point shooting and defense. I would love to see that moving forward.
How do you think Jane compliments – sorry, Jay, said real quick. How do you think Jane compliments Giannis so well, Lo?
It's the three-point shooting, obviously, but the length, athleticism, the defense. You know, again, shout-out to Bobby Portis. Shout out to Brook Lopez. Shout out to Miles Turner. But I would like to see a little bit more athleticism around him. 22 years old. Mm. He gets after it. He gets in a passing lane. He does the deflection. He does a lot of the things that he needs to do. And understandably so, he knows that he's trying to find a spot in the league. And I think this is the perfect situation for him. And then again, you go on the other side of the floor, you compliment Giannis by knocking down some threes, cutting to the basket, just being an active, live body. Like, all those things are really great around Giannis.
Yeah, and one thing quickly before you jump in, Jay, Jacob. I was at the Pfizer Forum, and so I ran into Usman Zhang, and first thing I asked him, because visually, you know, they're talking about 185, 190 is his weight. And the first thing I said is like, man, you don't weigh 185, 190, do you? He's like, oh, no. That was like 4 years ago when I first came into league. I'm up to like 220 right now. Nice. And I thought maybe 215, 210, 215. But so even that, you know, is to his benefit. I mean, this young man is, you know, when Giannis was a similar age, he was probably 6'10 listed at, but probably 220, 225 at a similar age. So not to say he's going to become the behemoth that Giannis has become in terms of his upper body, but he's headed in the right direction is the point. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, and I hope that he doesn't become the hulking human being right. that Giannis is, because his jumper's so smooth that you don't want to get away from that, you know?
Right.
Like I said, I love Jang. He completely, in my mind, completely changes the paradigm for the Bucks. And back to the question of, can the Bucks kind of keep this up, right? I think so. And the reason I think so is because Giannis solves the two biggest problems for this team. The first problem is that this team can't offensive rebound for their life at all. Statistically, they're one of the worst in the league right now. With Giannis on the floor, their offensive rebounding rate goes up by 10%. So that's an immediate thing, right? The other part is, yes, Cam Thomas is a great scorer. Yes, Ryan Rollins is a great scorer. Yes, KPJ is a great scorer. But they don't command the same interior gravity that, you know, Giannis does, right? So you talk about the kickout game low. You talk about the playmaking. And when you have Giannis driving into the paint, it's proven in everything you look at that every time they're sending two guys. And so now that you have him flanked by potentially up to three shooters on the floor at the same time, he's going to have so many kickout opportunities. So the Bucks have one of the 10 easiest schedules through the rest of the year. They're less than two games back from the play-in. I mean, I think it's certainly possible that they make the play-in and then, you know, you see what happens in the playoffs. But, I mean, I'm feeling pretty good about this team.
So you guys think...
I'll go a step forward, man. I think also what Jang does to his team is also just makes things interesting from a building aspect moving forward. The pick that you all may potentially get in this upcoming draft, that could also make things really exciting for the future. So in my opinion, and this is where, again, it goes back to around the margins and how much money you can get or how much production you should get on a dollar, man, he makes everything a lot more reasonable, breathable, and flexible for the rotation and team moving forward.
Yes, without a doubt.
Lo, did I detect a little lack of confidence about this team making a play-in with that last statement?
It's okay.
That could be a great pick.
Trust me. I'm just talking about the flexibility. You know, it can go either way. I mean, you look at it's Atlanta, Miami, and Charlotte. I mean, these are very gettable, winnable teams. Giannis comes in on one of the weaker schedules throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah.
You can flip the switch and you can find yourself quickly. And it's even probably as far as a 7 seed, the way that Orlando's been playing recently as well. So 7-8 is very, very, very reasonable and catchable. But regardless of what happens, make the playoffs or not, I just think, me personally, I think he is like one of the best additions at the deadline. And not enough people are really talking about how much he changes the complexity of what this team can do now, the rest of the season, and for the future.
Yes.
I agree wholeheartedly. Yep. So let's talk more about Ryan Rollins, most improved player. Now, you know, when Giannis won the award, I wasn't crazy about it because he was an all-star that year. To me, I like my most improved players just to not have skipped a level. You know what I'm saying? I mean, so they're talking Jalen Johnson, they're talking Denny Abdia as probably the leading candidates right now. How do you guys see that shaking out for Ryan Rollins? Does he have an opportunity to win that award?
I put this literally in my notes word for word. I mean, it's the same thing you said. The most improved player award is the weirdest award in the sense that you can have a player who was really good the previous season and they still win most improved player, even though how much did they really improve, right? Ryan Rollins is a top two traditional candidate for me. The other one is Keontae George. I've been really impressed with him with the Jazz. Yeah. It could go either way between those two. If the award were voted on as it should, I think Jalen Johnson's going to win just because the statistics with him are absurd. Triple doubles almost every other night. I mean, he is the franchise player for the Hawks right now. Some will differ with that based on his defense, but I want Ryan Rollins to win most improved player. Do I think he will? No, unfortunately.
I think he should. And I agree, man. I think the award has been at least the standard definition that we all kind of know it to be, it's changed so much over the last handful of years. Like people like Ja Morant are winning it, and it's like
went downhill with Ja Morant.
Yeah, like we know who these players are going to be, and even to Jalen Johnson. Like if you watch him last year, sure, yeah. he got injured
after the trade.
He was
deadline.
Good. Yeah. He was doing it last year.
He was good.
He was a beast.
So I don't like sure. Like it's definitely impressive that him and even Denny, for example, they're both all-star caliber players, fringe All-NBA maybe. That is a huge leap. But man, Ryan. Two-way contract last year. Ryan is someone that wasn't guaranteed to even be in the NBA. Ryan was struggling to find his place in the league as he went from the Warriors now with the Bucks and even was in the developmental league as well. Like he was going back and forth. He didn't really know what was going to happen. For him to go from that player last year, converting his two-way contract into where we are right now within a calendar year's time, that is the definition of improvement. And I think that there, shout out to Keontae out in Utah as well, but I personally do not believe there is no one who had a better story, especially over the last calendar season, who was developed to a quality NBA player standard for what we would expect from a starter in the league. And he was a two-way player last year. I think that is the definition of most improved.
Yeah, and I'm going to make a point, too, that you may not like Lowe because it kind of harkens back to my day, the old school plumber days. He's swimming every day. He's swimming. that's what we used to do. He's swimming.
Okay.
His plumber workout in low. He's swimming every day.
So I guess more than me to dip in the pool, man.
They're going to be saying Giannis played with plumbers back in the day.
Real plumbers. I've been giving you a hard time on that one, man. But no one has respected Ryan Rollins' work ethic. And I just mentioned the swimming thing just because even last year, he's working out with Darvin Ham's son. After every single game, they would get up and make like 500 shots. He would make after every game. You know, in five-star form, you see him out there sweating like crazy. And Donovan Ham, the assistant coach, would be out there working him. And everybody talks about Rajon Rondo and his development. But Donovan Ham is the guy that if you ask Ryan Rollins, has been there day to day, you know, pumping him up, watching film, working with him before games, after games. And so I just wanted to give Donovan Ham a big shout out, man, in terms of his commitment to helping this young man get better. And it's just fun for a guy like me to watch it actually transition and have some transference on the floor. So it's been a good thing. All right. So now that's Ryan Rollins, most improved. We feel like he should get it, but he may not because of kind of the skewed criteria of the way they're looking at it now.
Modern media.
The BS.
So now this season, we've got the 65 game. Did we have that last year also? May have had it last year.
We did have it last year, controversially.
65 game. You guys, where do you guys stand on that? I mean, right now, because you got, I mean, Giannis is out, LeBron. Well, I think LeBron may still have a chance. Guys are really pushing the limit in terms of the amount of games they've missed.
I think the premise of the rule was in good heart. You know, they wanted to have players out there play a little bit more, and you have to, you know, make sure they're out there. But you kind of get into this weird space where, I mean, Giannis is legitimately hurt. Jokic missed legitimate time. Shea is legitimately hurt. These are not players who are low managing per se. Normally when you miss this amount of games, it's because you're dealing with some type of real injury. And then you have to kind of just ask yourself, hey, is Jokic, Giannis, Shea, Luka, are all these players more impactful and more deserving if they play 64 games than someone else who may play 72 or 75? And I do think when you get to that upper echelon of talent, then, you know, I think it's understandably so. You should allow the voters to kind of make that determination. I think that it's a bit silly, and I think they should at least tone down or make a bit more exceptions. Maybe not make a first team, for example, but it's definitely going to be interesting to see this year.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, I think the 65-game rule is a good it's a good idea. I think it's a little too many games, in my opinion, just because of the wear and tear on players' bodies today. I'm not going to say it's necessarily more, but the injuries are more frequent. And we don't know fully the reason why that is. And SGA can only play, he has to play in at least 16 of the remaining 22 regular season games to be eligible. Okay. So he's still in it, but once again, it's close. And if later down the line, if we look at NBA history and we say, wow, Jokic and SGA and Luka and all these guys, wow, they didn't win MVP as many times as we thought they would. Yep. But that's going to be because of stuff like this. So I think there needs to be a minimum, but
yeah.
I think right now 65 is too high.
I'd love to get you guys' take on, it's kind of coming out of this conversation that we're having. It's about injuries in the NBA and the style of play because of this new emphasis on five out and defensively having to switch, guard, run out to the three, close out to shooters constantly. We're seeing guys getting hurt at more of a frequent rate. Now, do you guys buy that as the reason why we've seen an uptick sort of in injuries over the last season, or do you guys have a different theory about the injury rates in the NBA?
I'll let you go, Lo.
I'm be honest with you, man. I'm not an athlete, so I can't. I ain't gonna sit here and act like I know, but I do think that has something to do with it. Like the pace is not only up, but then you're obviously just covering more ground naturally, and so I would assume that that puts you at a compromising position. I do hear a lot of also discussion of players not properly preparing themselves before the season and throughout the year, and a lot of it is just the side effects of you deciding to remove, you know, back to backs and you know, four games in a 5-night stretch, which then means that the rest that you would normally have in between games is just not there. Basically, at this point, we're playing every other night for or long stretches of the season. And so there's a kickback one way or another. But I do think I think a lot of people can at least admit that, you know, having centers and 6'9 players who used to just stay next to the rim, they're now running all around the perimeter. I'm pretty sure that does have something to do with it.
Yeah, I will pose the theory that teams are rushing players back from injury more than ever before. Statistically, in 2001, for a calf injury, it took about 72 days for a player to recover. That's on average. And in 2025, it took four.
What?
Huh? And
4 days?
According to
4 days,
yes. Now, the average in 2001 is a little bit skewed. If you want to go to a season that has more calf injuries, you could look at maybe 2011, and it's 11 days. Okay. And so we're still seeing players recovering in 4 days versus 11 days. Now, are they actually recovering? I don't think so. Because when you look at the data of a rushed return from a soft tissue injury, and specifically in the calf, foot, and the hamstring, I call it the big three because it was the main big body areas that I had in the data set. When you rush a player back from a calf injury, which essentially means that they are the 75th percentile of speed of injury recovery, right? They have a 5.27x chance of tearing their Achilles. And the fact that teams are seemingly, I don't know if it's the teams or the players, that's an internal thing for people to decide, but players are coming back faster. And I think that is the result of we're seeing longer injuries afterwards, such as Tyrese Halliburton's Achilles tear, such as Dame's Achilles tear, such as, and I'm scared of Giannis's calf strain.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping the Bucks don't rush him back. But all that being said, I think it's, yes, the game is more spread out, more switchable, all that stuff. But players are coming back faster, and I think that's a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, and I believe in it. I believe just comparing the eras in terms of the amount of ground that we had to cover compared to guys today, it's crazy. I mean, you know, how much more they're running around. And it's not only, and this is the thing that I always tell people, it's not the jumping that gets to you, it's the coming down, it's the landing that bothers you.
It's that impact.
But even with the closing out, it's not the speed of getting there, it's now you put on the brakes.
It's slowing down,
you abruptly stop it, now you got to change direction, go over here, rotate back, and all that in terms of soft tissue injuries, to me, has caused for it to be even more numerous than they have been in the past. All right, now, let's go on to Tanky. A lot. This $500,000 fine against Utah, $100,000 fine against Indiana. Go ahead, Chris. Yeah.
But also, I don't know if you guys saw this, but the league sent their own doctors to Utah to diagnose Markkanen's injury to make sure it's legit. Yes. So what? I mean, what are you like, dude? Like, is tanking that big of an issue where you need all this stuff, all these safeguards to prevent it, or is the league overreacting?
You go.
No, go ahead, because I'm going to say something.
I'm on. This is something I'm kind of passionate about, too.
All right.
I am kind of floored just how much the NBA cares about something that has existed for a very long time. And we're talking about teams. It'd be one thing if we're like in the middle of peak process where you got a team in the NBA that's barely crossing the 10 win mark. But I mean, we're talking about teams that we knew were going to be bad before the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Bad in the first stages. And Siakam is out there playing games, and it's not as if like they're still winning. So I think the overreaction is kind of crazy. I do understand the idea, though, of, you know, Lauri Markkanen, if it is true that he is healthy and available, then play him in the fourth quarters. But, I mean, the Jazz are a bad team. It's not as if like they are a team that we were expecting to be in the playoffs. I'm also very passionate about some of the – Man, some of those suggestions that they're making to fix the rules.
Like, which ones, Lo?
I've heard way too many people just throw out there, just get rid of the entire lottery and allow players to just sign wherever they want to. That is,
you're telling me you don't like free agency with number one picks going to big markets?
Man,
you don't
I am a Laker fan, and even I know that is a very bad idea. That is a dumb idea. I don't know why too many people are just throwing that out there. The other problem is like stretching out the lottery odds even more. I think that's part of the reason why we are where we are right now. Teams that are bad need to get the talent so they can go through the process and cycle of going back to the top, like we see with Detroit and OKC and Houston. Allowing these teams to just be worse and then having a random team that may not need a top prospect to get a pick, it's a lot. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the overreaction, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I have an article coming out tomorrow, so by the time this is published, it'll be out. And I'm a numbers guy, right, as you guys have seen. Yeah, yeah. And I'm not convinced that tanking works. So when you look at a bottom three team in any given season, on average, yes, that team will win about 28% more games within 5 years, and they have a very good chance of adding 20 to their win column. So great, right? However, compared to the median team, so pretty much the middle of the pack team or the average NBA team, right? They have a less chance of getting to the playoffs, conference finals, or winning a championship. And what tanking does seem to do is it puts teams in the messy middle of the NBA, as I like to call it, which is where you make the playoffs, but you lose first round, or you just miss the playoffs and you don't have good lottery odds, and then you stay there. So I'm not convinced tanking is good for a team looking to win, but it is good for a team looking to upgrade where they currently are. So all that being said, where do I stand on the tanking thing? I think there does need to be something of a solution, because on an ethical level, I don't think it's right for teams to tank. From a competitiveness level, I don't think it's right for teams to tank. But I don't think there are that many good options. Like you mentioned, Lo, you could flatten the lottery odds entirely, which has its own knock-on effects. I don't think it's a terrible idea. I don't think it's a great idea.
So would you say flatten the lottery odds? What are we saying? You just everybody
every
has
team
the same
that doesn't make
chance?
The playoffs gets the same odds.
Yeah.
Okay. Which then the danger of that is that you have a situation like the Mavericks a couple years ago where they or last year, last year
the Cooper flag, yeah,
and they tanked the last game. However, I think it's easier for the NBA to regulate one game versus regulate an entire season. So I don't know. My stance on it is tanking is bad, but I'm not convinced that teams get that much better from it, at least in the ways that matter.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, man, we appreciate you guys stopping by here, District, man. This has been a very informative and spirited discussion on some of the current issues in basketball and Legends of Winning. You can find him on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, host of the Low Post, Low Likes, Put on the Line, and Legends of Winning channels on YouTube. And then Jay Set Hoops at .substack.com. Jacob Sutman.
Yes, sir.
Hey, guys, this has been beautiful. Appreciate you guys stopping by. And please, please, please join us again on the Here District, man. Thank you so much.
It's always an honor.
Thank you.
Always
right.
an honor.
All right. All right.
Absolutely.
Here, District.